ENTSD Clothing Co. You're now tuned into the hottest radio show in the hood, Drive Time Radio, with my boys, Grand Finale.
Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Devon of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Bill Munson is reporting for the Times Union. Congressional representatives from upstate have joined the chorus of Republicans and Democrats criticizing the decision of President Donald Trump to pull U.S. troops out of northeastern Syria in advance of an expected attack by Turkey and the anticipated impact on Kurdish allies. Republican U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik of Shilerville recently returned from a trip to Turkey and the Syrian-Jordanian border. Stefanik, in a joint statement issued along with four Democratic members of the House Armed Services Committee, called Trump's move, and I quote, "a misguided and catastrophic blow to our national security interests," end quote. Democrat U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado of Rhinebeck said American troops' removal was, and I quote, "deeply alarming," end quote. He told reporters, and I quote, "making this move without warning, at least without appearance of any coordination with our other allies in the region, is reckless and dangerous," end quote. Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer called the Kurds a key U.S. friend and ally. He said, and I quote, "to abandon them would make no sense at all when there's strong bipartisan opposition to that abandonment from Democrats and Republicans, and we're going to push the Trump administration to reverse its decision," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that Tyrone Eddy got 15,000 views for his YouTube video shot without permission at Coxsackie Correctional Facility in May. On October 7th, Eddie got 10 days in jail in Coxsackie Town Court for second-degree harassment with physical contact for while shooting that video. Eddie is a 53-year-old Connecticut man who calls himself New England Truth. He showed up at the prison recording several video feeds without permission and alleging that, quote, COs are beating inmates for no reason, unquote. Eddie approached correctional officer Jeremiah Donnelly in an aggressive manner, dipping his left shoulder and striking the officer's right shoulder, causing him to lose his balance. Quote, "I felt immediate pain in my shoulder in the area he hit," unquote, Donnelly said in a complaint filed with the state police. Quote, "I advised him that he had assaulted me," and he replied, quote, "yes, I did," unquote. Both Eddie and correction officers say they have received death threats since the incident occurred. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
The Daily Freeman is reporting former 19th Congressional District Representative Chris Gibson will join the Siena College faculty in September 2020 as a visiting professor in the political science and history departments. The college announced that Gibson, a graduate of Siena, will teach two courses per semester during his two-year visiting term. In a prepared statement, Gibson said Siena was strongly positioned to play a role in, and I quote, promoting political dialogue and respectful debate, end quote. The Kinderhook Republican served 3 2-year terms in the House before leaving politics in late 2016. In 2018, he ran Dutchess County Executive Marcus Molinaro's unsuccessful gubernatorial campaign. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Dan Friedman reports in the Times Union that Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is back at work after her time on the campaign trail, mostly in Iowa and New Hampshire. Quote, I feel very blessed by the opportunity to run for president, unquote, she said on conference call October 8th, promoting her Family and Medical Insurance Leave Act for paid family leave. Quote, I learned a lot that I can apply to my job in the U.S. Senate, unquote. Two bills she sponsored got passed while she was campaigning. One increasing the federal fund for workers at the World Trade Center after September 11, 2001, and a second expanding veteran benefits for the Blue Water Navy sailors that battled on the coastline and inland waterways in Vietnam. Gillibrand is now traveling around the state, including a stop in Albany on October 10th. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was briefed October 7th at the Stewart Air National Guard Base about water contamination from the base. In 2014, PFOS contamination was detected in Lake Washington, the city of Newburgh's water supply. The source of the contamination was determined to have come from the foam used by base firefighters. A state of emergency was declared by the city manager in 2016, and the city now gets its water through the Catskill Aqueduct. Currently, an 8-week timeline is in place to establish a new filtration system at the base. Following the briefing, Gillibrand said, and I quote, this is a good start, but any time you are talking about contaminants in water, it requires long-term monitoring, requires testing of wells, testing of different water systems. So this will be a collaboration between the military and the federal government, state, DEC, and local communities, end quote. PFOS is highly toxic and can cause kidney and testicular cancer, affect the liver, thyroid, immune systems, and fetus development. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster and Dutchess counties announced October 8th they were filing a motion in court to join a state lawsuit objecting to the federal government issuing a certificate of completion to the Hudson River PCB cleanup. Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, a Democrat, and Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican, said they were backing the state lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency's issuance of a certification of completion of remedial action to General Electric for their PCB cleanup of the Hudson River. Quote, today we are coming together as two counties to continue that fight. We can't let General Electric off the hook for the mess they made of our precious Hudson River, unquote, Ryan said in a press release. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was briefed October 7th at the Stewart Air National Guard Base about water contamination from the base. In 2014, PFOS contamination was detected in Lake Washington, the city of Newburgh's water supply. The source of the contamination was determined to have come from the foam used by base firefighters. A state of emergency was declared by the city manager in 2016, and the city now gets its water through the Catskill Aqueduct. Currently, an 8-week timeline is in place to establish a new filtration system at the base. Following the briefing, Gillibrand said, and I quote, this is a good start, but any time you are talking about contaminants in water, it requires long-term monitoring, requires testing of wells, testing of different water systems. So this will be a collaboration between the military and the federal government, state, DEC, and local communities, end quote. PFOS is highly toxic and can cause kidney and testicular cancer, affect the liver, thyroid, immune systems, and fetus development. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
The Times Union reports that Hannaford is recalling its house brand White American Cheese from the supermarket's deli counter. On October 8th, the local chain announced that any cheese purchased between September 8th and October 8th may contain metal fragments. Customers returning the cheese will get a refund. A Hannaford spokesperson said there had not been any injuries or illnesses from eating the cheese. Read more about the recall in the Times Union.
Ben Cesario is reporting for the New York Times. On Monday, October 7th, the nonprofit Pacifica Foundation, owner of New York's WBAI-FM, abruptly laid off most of the station's staff and replaced local programming with shows from Pacifica's other stations. On Tuesday morning, a Manhattan Supreme Court judge ordered Pacifica to put the station back into the hands of WBAI personnel and to restore its signal to the radio airwaves and the station's website. 10 of WBAI's 12 employees have been laid off, according to John Bernal, Pacifica's interim executive director. Berthold Reimers, WBAI's general manager, told producers in an email early Monday, and I quote, "There is a show on the air now that I do not recognize. This means your shows are no longer on WBAI," end quote. Pacifica leaders said the decision to shut down WBAI had been in the works for months, and that the step was needed to save the foundation from ruin. However, BAI employees and volunteer hosts said they were blindsided by the decision. Pacifica blamed the station's ongoing financial challenges for its decision to suddenly shut down the station. WGXC-FM is a member of the Pacifica Network, which is operated by the Pacifica Foundation and airs Off the Hook from WBAI. The Off the Hook Twitter account reported October 8th that a judge issued an injunction to put the station back on the air. And I quote, "We are happy to announce that at WBAI has gotten an injunction to stay the takeover of the station by at Radio Pacifica. All programming will resume and the next court date is October 18th, end quote. Off the Hook airs at 8 p.m. Wednesdays live on both WBAI and WGXC. Read the full story in the New York Times.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a slight chance of rain after 10 a.m. Patchy fog between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 60 degrees. Wednesday night, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of around 44. And on Thursday, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 58 degrees. A slight chance of rain again on Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 45. So there you have your weather update. Brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXC program schedule during the coming week. On Friday, October 11th, from 2 to 5 p.m., the City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment will live stream its budget workshop, which will be a review session. The mayor, city treasurer, and president of the Hudson Common Council make up the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. You can tune in by going to WGXC.org, click on Listen, then scroll through the drop-down player to find the dedicated web stream. On Friday, October 11th, from 7 to 8 p.m., tune in for a special remote broadcast of Sound Art Revisited, a discussion with author and musician Alan Licht, with a panel featuring composer and sound artist Anaya Lockwood, Wave Farm Executive Director Galen Joseph Hunter, Wave Farm Artist in Residence Grant Smith, and sound artist and educator Zach Poff. The event, which takes place at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, will be broadcast live on WGXC 90.7 FM and streamed live online at wavefarm.org/listen. On Friday, October 11th, from 9 to 11 p.m., WGXC Live will carry a live stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Performing will be Mother Fletcher with an eclectic and unique mix of ska, rock, and reggae.
tune in to 90.7 FM to hear it on the air, or go to WGXC.org, click on Listen at the top of the page, and scroll down to find the live web stream. See theavalonlounge.com for more information. On Saturday, October 12th, starting at 10 p.m., WGXC Live will carry a live stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. In the first of a series of community dance parties called Pan-African Jam, DJ Neva of WGXC's Music for the Masses brings Felebration, a worldwide birthday party for Fela Anikolapo Kuti, to Catskill with a night of Afrobeat from all corners of the globe. The event will feature a jam session with local percussionists. There should be a live web stream at WGXC.org after 10 p.m. Click on Listen at the top of the page and scroll down to find the live web stream. The show will also air on 90.7 FM after midnight. See theavalonlounge.com for more information. Be sure to check our program schedule for new listings of public events, community meetings, and other dedicated web streams, which may not have been posted at the time this announcement was recorded. You can also download the free Wavefarm app to listen on your phone or iDevice, or use it to become a broadcast partner with WGXC.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Wednesday, October 9th, a Hudson Housing Authority meeting will be held at Bliss Towers, 41 2nd Street, at 6 p.m. On Thursday, October 10th, a collaboration with the City of Hudson Senior Center and the Hudson Area Library will focus on discovering the power of the inner self through the practice of daily writing. Taught by author, artist, educator, and social activist Maureen McNeil. Registration is limited at programs@hudsonarealibrary.org and is on a first-come, first-served basis. Congressperson Antonio Delgado will be interviewed by K.T. Tobin, Associate Director of the Benjamin Center at the State University of New York at New Paltz, from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The focus of this public conversation will be on Congressperson Delgado's early experience in Congress and his priorities going forward as he represents and serves constituents in his 11-county district. There will be time for questions from the audience. Undocumented Immigrants, Struggles in Our Time, Documentary and Discussion, sponsored by the Mountaintop Immigrant Support Network and held at the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. On Friday, October 11th, the last day to register in person for the general election. If registering by mail, the application must be postmarked by October 11th and received by the Board of Elections no later than October 16th. Also, deadline for a change of address for the general election. The Greene County Office Building is located at 411 Main Street, Catskill, and the Columbia County Office Building is at 401 State Street in Hudson. The City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment Budget Workshop Review Session will be held at Hudson City Hall from 2:30 to 5 p.m. Ever wonder why our Catskill terrain looks so different from one area to another? Join local scientists and authors Robert and Johanna Titus for The Catskills in the Ice Age, a lesson in reading the Catskill landscape. The Tituses have made the study of the Catskill landscape their work for 30 years at the Mountaintop Historical Society on Route 23A in Palinville at 7 p.m. A TSL Bookspace event. Musician and artist Alan Licht visits Time and Space Limited on Columbia Street in Hudson to discuss the new edition of his work, Sound Art Revisited. Licht will be joined in conversation by composer and sound artist Anya Lockwood, Wavefarm artist-in-residence Grant Smith, sound artist and educator Zach Poff, and Wavefarm executive director Galen Joseph Hunter at 7 p.m. This event is being broadcast live on WGXC 90.7 FM in New York's Upper Hudson Valley and streamed live online on Wavefarm Radio. Panel and broadcast at 7 p.m., ticketed supper at 6:15.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa. This week marks 18 years since the U.S. dropped its first bombs on Afghanistan in Kabul.
Since 9/11, we as taxpayers have spent over $6 trillion to pay for wasteful regime change wars, wars that have taken the lives of thousands of my brothers and sisters in uniform.
That was Hawaii Representative and Army National Guard veteran Tulsi Gabbard on the issue she makes the focal point of her campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. The true security and safety of Americans, including not putting our armed forces at risk unnecessarily. Many 2020 candidates want to bring U.S. troops in Afghanistan home, including President Donald Trump, who claimed he was close to making a deal with the Taliban that fell through. This week, he decided to pull troops from northern Syria, putting U.S.-allied Syrian Kurdish forces at risk of an invasion by Turkey, whose military is second in size only to the United States in the NATO alliance. This is part of President Trump's goal to stop what he calls ridiculous endless wars, a goal Gabbard shares, but with a different approach. She's a strong proponent of diplomacy before military action. Criticized for meeting with Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad and refusing to call him a war criminal in 2017, she later clarified that Assad is a brutal dictator, but that launching a U.S. military attack in response to his use of chemical weapons should require highly nuanced discussions at many levels.
We see examples of Roosevelt meeting with Stalin, who was responsible for the deaths of tens of millions of people. We saw Nixon meeting with Mao in China. They were criticized for meeting with brutal dictators, with adversaries, but they did so understanding this is the only way to achieve peace and to avoid war.
Diplomacy with Iran has stalled since President Trump scuttled Obama's nuclear deal and put in place what some call crippling economic sanctions that even U.S. allies are working around. Iran President Hassan Rouhani has refused to meet with President Donald Trump until sanctions are at least partially lifted. Rising tensions raise questions about military security and cybersecurity after Microsoft revealed a group they believe has ties to Iran attempted to access Trump campaign email accounts. Political entities are particularly susceptible to these attacks, explains Douglas Jones, expert in election security at University of Iowa.
Individual campaigns are vulnerable because even rumor of hacking can be used to tremendous political advantage. We've been demanding services without really demanding security, and that attitude is becoming quite dangerous now.
Yesterday, the Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee called for sweeping action by Congress to prevent social media interference in 2020, acknowledging Russian interference in 2016 that damaged Hillary Clinton and helped the Trump campaign. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Elected officials, environmental groups, and scientists gather in Montrose, New York tomorrow for a regional forum on decommissioning nuclear power plants, including Indian Point. The forum will address an audience of federal, state, and local officials and citizens about public safety concerns around the decommissioning process. According to Manna Jo Green with the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, one major concern is that the private companies being considered for the work want to transport the waste to interim storage sites in Texas and New Mexico.
That would be bringing this highly radioactive waste through communities by potentially bumpy and unsuitable roads or rail or barge.
Holtec International, the company acquiring the Indian Point licenses, says the sale means decommissioning will be completed decades sooner than if Entergy continued to own the plants. Holtec also is decommissioning the Oyster Creek nuclear plant in New Jersey. Green points out that both Indian Point and Oyster Creek use fuel that is so hot and radioactive it needs to cool off in pools for 5 to 7 years after it is removed from the reactors.
At Oyster Creek, they're saying they're going to complete the process, including emptying the fuel out of the fuel pools into dry casks in 2 to 3 years.
She says the business model of private decommissioning companies involves doing the work quickly and inexpensively, turning money left over from the decommissioning funds into profit. The forum will include safety experts, watchdog groups, and officials from cities where nuclear plants have been decommissioned. Green notes that raising the issues now gives regulators and legislators the information they need to protect the public.
Putting public health and safety first is our goal, and providing the best available information seems like the best action to take to ensure that.
The forum starts at 1 p.m. tomorrow at the Hendrick Hudson Free Library in Montrose. Space is limited, but the event will be videotaped. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
October 11th is the deadline to register for the November 5th town and county elections. This year, though, voting begins October 26th at a limited number of locations. Locally, Green has one location in Catskill, while other voters registered in Columbia County have 3 locations to vote ahead of November 5th, the county office building in Hudson, the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building in Valencia, and the Copeg Town Hall in Copeg. In southern Albany County, the Helderberg Ambulance site at 978 Coal Hill Road in East Bern will be set up for all voters registered in election districts in Bern, Knox, Rensselaerville, and Westerlo. The Bethlehem Lutheran Church at 85 Elm Avenue in Delmont will be for voters registered in Bethlehem, Coeymans, and New Scotland. In southern Rensselaer County, the Skodak Town Hall at 265 Sherman Road in Castleton-on-the-Hudson will be set up for early voting. To gain a political advantage, Republicans in the majority in Rensselaer County did not set up an early voting site in Troy, the county's largest city and home of more Democrats than GOP members.
Catskill's Amy Rigby is touring Europe at the moment on the 20th anniversary of her Diary of a Mod Housewife album. And she was on the BBC this week and made the news. Slate.com reported she has a new song called From Philip Roth at Gmail to RZ Zimmerman at AOL.com about Bob Dylan's recent recently winning the Nobel Prize for Literature. She seems to take the point of view that Philip Roth might be more deserved. Here's the song. Philip Roth at Gmail to RZ Zimmerman at AOL.com from Amy Rigby, from Catskill's Amy Rigby.
Thank you.
tuned to radio station WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
Wavefarm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Emily Shimidis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. In an 8-page letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the White House on Tuesday explained why it will not participate in the House impeachment inquiry. Democrats have released several subpoenas in recent days concerning President Trump's reported effort to get Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden in a July phone call with Ukraine's leader. The letter claims Trump's due process rights have been circumvented without a vote and that Trump has had no choice but to not cooperate. The letter also makes clear the administration will continue to reject requests from Democrats if the proceedings continue in their current manner. The Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee released a new report saying that Russia directed a disinformation campaign during the 2016 election to hurt Hillary Clinton and favor Trump. The report says a group of Russian hackers used social media tactics to promote Trump and divide the country. The committee concluded its findings with a call to action in efforts to fight back against future election interference. For the first time, Senator Elizabeth Warren holds a slight lead in national polls of the 2020 Democratic primary instead of Vice President Joe Biden. And Warren is getting some attention for her labor platform recently released. She focuses on unions and sectoral bargaining, a concept new to most Americans. Laura Rosbro-Tellum reports.
Sectoral bargaining is when an entire field or industry agrees on basics, like safety standards or minimum wages, rather than each company bargaining with its own workers. Benjamin Sachs, professor of labor and industry at Harvard Law School, says it's worth noting because union membership has decreased in the U.S. He thinks it's partly because of the way businesses, or enterprises, handle their bargaining now.
The problem with enterprise bargaining is that as soon as you have a union in one enterprise, that puts that enterprise at a competitive disadvantage with all the other enterprises in the same market.
Senator Warren asserts that if every company in an industry had the same bargaining terms, none would be at a competitive disadvantage about those issues. Sectoral bargaining is used in many European countries, but the idea is still new to the U.S.
In health news, a landmark study funded by the National Institutes of Health found links between nicotine vaping products and lung cancer in mice. The news comes as states grapple with an outbreak in lung injuries associated with vaping. Vaping among teens is especially concerning, says Dr. Say Shirala with the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. Research has shown that using nicotine during adolescence affects the brain's prefrontal cortex, an area linked to impulses and decision-making skills. Chorla says that can lead to serious health problems down the road.
This can establish a pattern of lifelong addiction and use. So those are some of our biggest concerns.
The number of illnesses linked to e-cigarettes now totals more than 1,000. This is PNS. For the fifth year in a row, combined cases of gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis have risen in the U.S., according to the CDC. The number marks the most cases ever recorded since monitoring began. Officials say possible factors driving the increase include a surge in people getting tested and cases being diagnosed and reported. There's also a decline in condom use. Now a story out of Texas, where new research finds where you live can be a determining factor in how long you live. Mark Richardson explains.
Brian Sasser with the Episcopal Health Foundation says the study was designed to show there are significant factors beyond health care, like housing, transportation, food supply, and race, that contribute to a person's life expectancy.
Our point was to show the stark differences between neighborhood to neighborhood and life expectancy, and many times within the same county or in the same community. There's all those things that happen outside the doctor's office that affect a person's health.
Neighborhoods with the lowest life expectancy are those where at least 27% of residents live below the poverty line. Most high life expectancy communities were majority white, while those with the shortest lifespans were majority Latino.
A study is underway to determine how much methane is escaping from New Mexico's Permian Basin, one of the most prolific oil and gas basins in the U.S. Methane emissions are 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at driving climate change in the near term. So the Environmental Defense Fund is leading an effort to measure the extent of the problem. Susan Torres with the State Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department says the recent surge in oil and gas production has heightened concerns about methane emissions.
It's the biggest portion of methane emissions in New Mexico. It's been hard to keep up.
More than half of U.S. oil rigs are now in the Permian Basin. Pacific Gas and Electric shutting off power for 800,000 households in 34 California counties as a precaution due to high wildfire risk. High winds are forecast through midday Thursday, but in some areas, customers could be in the dark for 5 days or more. In other energy-related news, this month is National Cooperative Month, which draws attention to electric cooperatives, which power more than half of landmass in the U.S. Nadia Romlagan has more from Kentucky.
Electric cooperatives are member-owned, not-for-profit utility companies, often serving rural areas. An energy specialist at the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development, Rachel Norton, says unlike a traditional utility beholden to its stakeholders, electric co-op members can often choose clean energy options, like solar.
Organizations like Rural Electric Co-op at least have opportunities for all of their member owners to take advantage of solar through their programs that do pay for themselves.
In 2017, electric co-ops across the U.S. collectively returned more than $1.1 billion in excess revenue to their members.
I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media on the proposed transition into the new jail facility being discussed by Greene County officials. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said October 8th, the State Commission of Corrections, and I quote, wants the transition team of corrections officers to be on site during the construction, end quote. The team would be housed in a trailer at the cost of $28,000 a year, Groden said. The transition team is made up of six officers, and they are responsible for rewriting the jail operational protocols, which necessitates full access to the facility. Groden said, and I quote, all the procedures of the old jail, that all gets chucked out the window, end quote. All new protocols set by the transition team must be approved by the Commission of Corrections. Despite objections raised by legislators about renting the trailer, Groden said it will arrive in November. Groden said, and I quote, the substantial completion date for the jail is January 2021, end quote, and jail personnel can then begin to move into the building. Those detained by the county will be housed at the new facility beginning in July 2021. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Kayla Harris is reporting for the Times Union. Legislation has been introduced in Albany to require all New York schools to report student body immunization rates to the State Department of Health. The department would monitor trends in the data and create a searchable public database. State Senator Brad Holyman, a Manhattan Democrat and a sponsor of the bill, said, and I quote, "Parents have a right to know whether their child's fellow students are up to date on all their required vaccines," end quote. Holyman was also a sponsor of the legislation that made New York the fifth state in the country to ban religious exemptions for vaccine requirements for school-aged children. The pending bill stipulates that the health department would track trends in immunization data, including exemptions over time and areas where individuals might be more vulnerable to diseases. Read the full story in the Times Union. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Common Council will vote next week on whether to authorize a settlement agreement with the federal government that would establish a timeline for the city to comply with the provisions of the Americans with Disability Act. The ADA became law in 1990 and prohibits discrimination based on disability. A complaint was filed by three city residents alleging a lack of accommodations in public spaces, arguing the city's sidewalks are inaccessible and the entrances to City Hall, Promenade Hill Park, and other locations are also inaccessible. Following an investigation, the city was found to be out of compliance in several categories. Under the settlement agreement, the mayor must appoint an ADA compliance officer within 30 days. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said October 7th, the compliance officer will deal with complaints and determine how best to address them. The Common Council will next meet at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, October 15th at City Hall. Editors note, DiPietro is a WGXE volunteer programmer. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Heather Bellow is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle. An adjunct professor employed by Bard College at Simmons Rock resigned October 8th, citing the mishandling of a reported attack on a student of color last month as her reason. Julia Kirst, who taught in the language department, said administrators have failed to confront racism at the Great Barrington campus, and she said there is a dismissive attitude in general toward the student's report of being knocked unconscious and dragged into the woods on campus. Parents of some students have called the assault a hoax, Chris said. The 18-year-old woman reported the assault to campus security just after 2 p.m. on September 27th. The incident followed reports of the N-word scrawled on a chalkboard and a swastika was found etched into a bathroom stall. Local and state police, as well as Berkshire District Attorney's Office, are investigating the attack and whether it was a hate crime. The U.S. Attorney's Office also has been notified. The school administration this week announced its plan to hire an independent investigator to review the matter, but Vice Provost Susan Lyon said she could not speak to specifics, and I quote, out of respect for the survivor of the open investigation, end quote. The school is currently on a scheduled fall semester break. And you can read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. The local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a slight chance of rain for this Wednesday afternoon. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 61 degrees and a northeast wind at around 8 miles an hour. Tonight, there's a chance of rain mainly between 9 and 5 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 46 and a north wind at 7 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, rain is likely mainly after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a high near 57 degrees. Thursday night, rain is likely, mainly before 7 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 46. And on Friday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 57 degrees. Friday night, a slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of around 48. So there you have your weather update brought to you by WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bill Mancini and Bernadette Powis of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe at the Wavefarm Study Center, and we're joined now by Olympia Avignone. No, I got it all wrong.
Yes, Avignone.
I got close. Okay. You're from the Mountaintop Progressives Immigrant Support Network, and you guys are screening two films tomorrow night, Thursday, at 6:30 p.m. at the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Tom. I'm very appreciative to be here so that we can share our information. We are a new humanitarian initiative, and we are called the Mountaintop Immigrant Support Network. It's an outreach to the community. Our first public meeting is going to be this Thursday, as you said, at the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville at 6:30. And the address there is 6093 Main Street in Tannersville. Their number is 518-589-5707 if you need more info. So this initiative is, it's an outreach to the community, and we are want to share with everyone the current immigration situation. Our purpose is to learn how to support our neighbors at risk. We're going to be showing two short videos, one named Undocumented in Trump's America, and the other is from the ACLU named Raids, Watch, Know Your Rights. So that viewing will be followed by a discussion and a question and answer with representatives from the Ulster County Immigrant Support Network and the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. And they are all experienced in assisting undocumented immigrants. We'll also have available written materials from the American Federation of Teachers in both English and Spanish. One is a booklet, Immigrant and Refugee Children, a Guide for Educators and School Support, and the other is Know Your Rights pamphlet. So this is, we're just getting off the ground here. This is our first meeting. We look forward to having more meetings and having them open to the public. And so we want to have the purpose of our committee, if you'd like me to go on with that, Tom.
Yeah, the Mountaintop Progressives have been around for a long time working on different issues, but this is the first time you're specifically working on immigration?
Yes, yes. So this is, we started a month ago, and what kicked it off was myself and two other of the members attended a meeting in Ulster County. And there were several representatives from the Woodstock Organization, Ulster County Immigrant Support Network, and the Columbia Sanctuary Movement. And those are very experienced individuals who help immigrants, undocumented immigrants, through the process and helped educate us. And so we're tying into those organizations that are already well-established, and they're our resource, and those are the hotline numbers to call if anyone is in great need. But we felt there was a need in Greene County, so we're starting on the mountaintop since that's where we all live, and we know that these issues are all over. It's not just in the cities, it's in the rural areas. And so
well, lots of farmers have immigrant help.
Yes.
I haven't heard as much about the immigration customs enforcement raids in Greene County. There have been plenty in Columbia County, and the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement has responded to those. Have there been actions in Greene County?
There have. I can't speak specifically, but I have heard that there have been. So that's why we're concerned. Well, we value all our neighbors, all our citizens, and our immigrants support, give us, they're the backbone of our country, and they are our neighbors, and we want to and support them in any way we can.
Yeah, if you take the immigration argument out of the whole issue, all the restaurants I know in Greene County are desperate for workers.
Mm-hmm.
They all, there's not enough people who want to work in the kitchen. There's not enough people who want to wait tables. And they're going to take workers out of the county? I mean, it just seems kind of crazy in that regard.
Right. And many farmers are also suffering because they don't have workers either. So it really is the backbone. And if you look at it, we're all immigrants. You know, I'm a third generation Italian-American. My grandparents came here many years ago, worked very hard. And as we all, unless we're Native American, we all come from immigrants. So it's a little ironic that we're treating them this way. Not we, but
the current administration.
Yes.
The past administration had some issues too, but the current administration has now got children locked up in cages and talking about alligators and in a moat on the border and things like that.
Yes. And so what came up at the meeting that we attended, people who have worked with children in immigrant families, the preschoolers and the school age kids, they didn't have, there it wasn't fear based, but now everyone has a lot of fear, regardless of age. So it's a really a terrible time if you are an immigrant. Even people who are documented have fears. So it's terrible. It's really terrible.
Yes. There have been a couple cases of legal Americans being locked up for supposedly being undocumented.
Yes, yes. Now, again, I'm not a, I don't know a lot of information. This is new to me too. So I'm learning myself. I'm a speech pathologist. So I'm approaching it in the schools. I'm trying to push for the schools and share these written materials that schools can use. So I'm trying to be a resource in that respect.
Are you guys going to do trainings like the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement does trainings with immigrants about what to do in a situation, and they train each other too about what to do in a situation, and have actually sort of stymied ICE a couple times.
Yes.
From taking someone away.
Right.
So are you guys going to go through that same sort of training or?
We possibly sometime in the future. Right now we have the written materials that that we can distribute that help people to have that information to know what to do.
And you're going to have somebody from the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement Thursday night at this.
Yes.
To if someone wants to address that issue, they can talk to them about it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So tell us more about the Thursday night, two films and a talk. And is there a website people can go to find out more information?
Yes. So the website is... it's MT. Well, it's not a website. It's an email address.
Ah, so you can send an email, yeah.
You can send an email, and then we have a Facebook. So on the Facebook, it talks about what our mission statement is. And I'm not sure, 100% sure, if the specifics of this meeting will be there, but you can get more information. And that's Mountaintop Immigrant Support Network, all one word.
Do you have a separate Facebook page for the Immigrant Support Network?
That's the Facebook page, yeah. Mountaintop Immigrant Support Network. And then the email address is mttopisn@gmail.com.
And the Mountaintop Progressives have a Facebook page too, just general.
Yes, I think, they do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can find out more about the your group there. Yeah.
Yes.
How many folks are interested in this Immigrant Support Network so far? How many are you guys working with? A lot of people, or you're just starting? So
we're just starting. So there's just 12 of us on the committee.
Well, that's a lot for 1 month in.
We did a lot, yes.
But you're looking for more folks. So if
yes,
this is a specific chance, if people are interested in affecting the immigrant issue locally, coming out Thursday night would be a good time to step up.
Yes, we've outreached to the churches, to the schools, to the restaurants. We've put flyers up everywhere, and we're partnering with three organizations: the Woodstock Immigrant Support Network, the Ulster Immigrant Defense Network, and with Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. So those are very well-established organizations, and they are our go-to people. And we have I have two hotline numbers if anyone's listening to this and needs a hotline number. So the Ulster Immigrant Defense Network hotline is 888-726-7276. And the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement hotline number is 518-303-3848. So I think probably any time of day you can call those numbers for assistance.
If someone can't make it Thursday night, are there things you're and they want to help with the immigration movement in general? What are, kind of things are you telling people?
We will have our next meeting will be October 21st, I believe, the location to be determined. So I would stay tuned, go to the Facebook page. It will probably be listed there or email us. The types of things that we want to accomplish ongoing is we want to initiate an ongoing forum that connects our immigrant community with the Maine community. We want to increase awareness of immigrant concerns and their rights. And we need to just determine what the needs are in our specific communities. We want to provide resources and contacts with other established support networks that I mentioned before in Ulster and Columbia counties and provide a venue for ongoing discussion and open dialogue. So there are very specific things that they have been doing in the other counties, and that's listed on the mission statement. You know, I don't want to, you know, just read that. Mm-hmm. You can go to our mission statement on our Facebook page, and that delineates all sorts of things that the other organizations have been doing, like collecting money to provide clothing, food for some of these families. Transportation is an issue because they very often they have trouble getting to some of their legal meetings that they need to get to. For those who are involved in preventing deportation or detention, there's this hotline number helps you. There are people that will come out and help in that instance. So those are some of the types of things that we look forward to possibly instituting in the future. But right now we're very young and we're just determining those needs and making a connection and just getting the word out, us personally.
There's probably a lot of people that would be interested that don't even know you exist yet because you just started. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's going to take some time. But if you just joined us, we're talking to Olympia Avignone of the Mountaintop Progressives Immigrant Support Network. And there, why don't you give us the information about the screenings again if people just joined us?
Okay. So it is tomorrow night.
Thursday.
Thursday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville. The address there is 6093 Main Street in Tannersville. The number at the library is 518-589-5707. We will be showing two films and having a discussion and a Q&A, questions and answers. And we will have some experts from Ulster County Immigrant Support Network and the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, who are very experienced and can answer questions. And we will have pamphlets and brochures available in both English and Spanish that give very specific information.